when I was younger and starting my career, I wanted to be like in mainstream and mainstream stuff. And that actually meant like part of white shows. And that's not where I'm at anymore.
Poorna Jagannathan, welcome to Settle In. Thank you so much for joining us.
Amna Nawaz. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are going to refer to each other only by our full names for this entire interview.
Yes, that's exactly it. Okay? That's exactly it.
Cool. Agreed. Everyone's going to see you and they're going to be like, I know her. How do I know her? It's because you've been everywhere. You have been on TV series like The Night Of and Rami and Never Have I Ever and Big Little Lies and Deli Boys and dozens of movies like The Outlaws and Wolves with George Clooney and Brad Pitt. You are now starring in the new Lanterns series that's based on Green Lantern comic. I mean, your career, we're going to get into all of it.
Yeah.
But when you sit here and you look back, like just reading these names, and this isn't even a third of what you've done. Mm-hmm. Did you ever imagine this career for yourself?
No. There were so many times when, oh man, I forgot the gardener comes today. Man, it's going to get noisy. I'll move somewhere. I'm looking at it, I'm like, oops. There were so many times that I quit acting altogether. There was just never any work. And in I thought I would just be in advertising and take acting classes over the weekend. I always thought that was going to be my life. And I was so at peace with that. So to have this and for you to rattle off so much, what an incredibly lucky person I am.
Lucky and hardworking and talented and all of the things. We're going to get into all of it. One of the things we like to do, though, is to help our audience sort of better understand how you became who you are, which is this incredibly successful, but as I know personally, just incredibly warm and wonderful woman. Let's talk about you, how Poorna became Poorna. You had the benefit of growing up like all over the world, didn't you?
Yes.
Tell me about that. How many countries did you live in?
I never counted.
What do you remember? Can you list a few?
I remember all of them.
Yeah.
So we did 3 years in every country. I did Tunisia, India, Ireland, Pakistan, Argentina, America, Brazil. And now I went back to America to live. So that is 8 countries.
And that's all during the years you're growing up, right? Your father was a diplomat.
That's right. He was a diplomat. So every 3 years we picked up and left. And within those countries, every year and a half, we picked up and moved to another completely other house. So it was always a different neighborhood. The moving, the nomadic lifestyle that I was brought up with, I actually had to make a decision 10 years ago to break up with that lifestyle because it was so in my blood. I got itchy feet at 3 years, so I'd move again. And, you know, it was just a cycle I kept repeating.
But did you enjoy it as a child, or was it the kind of thing that you were like, I never want to do this again?
It depends. It depended on the countries. I think the countries where I was placed in situations with more diversity were just easier than the non. You know, I was in Argentina, and when you look at the school picture, there were so many of us, you could spot me in a second because I was the only person of color, right? Mm. So, and Argentina back then, I know it's changed, was like severely, severely racist. So, you know, when you're younger, you don't have the language for it. And your parents, because they were diplomats in diplomatic circles, they didn't experience it. Mm-hmm. So it was a very isolating experience for me and my sister in some countries. But, you know, again, in Ireland, I was the only person of color and always felt so welcome. And this year in March, I went back and I saw all my friends from kindergarten and first grade.
Oh, wow.
We brought out all the pictures, I'm in touch with everyone from every part of my life. And it is, you know, you grow up with a huge sense of not belonging anywhere when you have this kind of nomadic lifestyle. And then I always carried that. And then I turned 50 and I realized, I don't know how old you are, but there's a huge transition when you're 50. You belong in your own body suddenly, and that just helped me belong everywhere else. So it's a very interesting thing. My sense of belonging is very recent.
Was it the kind of thing when you're a kid, I hear this from people who have to move a lot, that sometimes it teaches you how to fit in wherever you are, that it's like, regardless of the culture or the people or whatever, like, I will find a way to make this work.
What was very interesting is, you know, I was in countries like Brazil or Argentina where speaking English wasn't, and you know, it wasn't, it's not like a Pakistan where, you know, English and Urdu went side by side a lot. It is countries where everything was in Spanish or everything was in Portuguese. Mm-hmm. And of course you had so many people who spoke English, but that wasn't your, you know, you don't go through your day to day with that. So I noticed my body language would change depending on what country I was, faster than I could learn the language, like how you spoke, like Argentinians use their hand a lot, and it's a lot of this for I don't know, and you know, it's a lot of this. So I pick up, my body would automatically pick up different stuff depending where I am. So I do know that. And also when I'm like with a certain person, I have to stay very focused on staying in my accent. Because if I'm like with a British person, an Irish person, my words will change immediately. So it's weird. There's like a internal thing that happened. It's the need to adjust and the need to fit in right away.
But makes you super flexible, like super adaptable wherever you are.
You have to be. If you want to survive and stuff, it really forces you to.
So the internet tells me you went on to study journalism.
Yes.
Which I never knew. Is that right?
You didn't know that?
No. Why journalism?
The same reason I think you're in it. Yeah, or the same reason I'm an actor. I think human behavior always has been fascinating to me. Even when I, you know, I started journalism and I was a journalist for a while and then I went into advertising. But even within advertising, I was in consumer research, which is human behavior. So it's been like fascinating. It's been a fascination of mine. But, you know, I was always surrounded by journalists at home. We had different kind of fractions of people that would cycle through the house. Like, again, being in a diplomatic household, I can't remember one night where we didn't have a guest. It didn't exist. So there were so many. I was surrounded by journalism, and it also felt like a little artistic and a little something that my parents could swallow. So while I was in school for journalism at the University of Maryland, I also did a little bit of acting, you know, acting classes, but they didn't know that. But it just seemed like a respectable enough cover.
A cover. So was the acting classes. So you start to, in college, you start to think maybe this is something I want to do. Is that when the idea first comes to you?
Yes.
And why? What was it about that line of work or that lifestyle that was attractive?
I think it's like, I know that when I watch a play or a movie or a TV show, I know that I watch it differently from the people around me. Like, I can't even explain it. Like, even as a young, like, I remember being 3 years old and watching a Hindi movie, and I was bawling my eyes out from beginning to end, a Bollywood movie. And my mother would get annoyed because there was one TV that someone had upstairs that the whole building would go. And I remember her because she'd have to leave this group of her friends and take me downstairs because I was like so out of control crying. So I don't know. I take in stuff a little differently. And so I knew, like, when I was watching stuff like E.T. or even Top Gun, like, I knew I wanted to be part of that world. And I didn't know what that meant, but I wanted to be and create that feeling for myself and for others always.
And was that the kind of thing that would have been okay with your family, with your parents, or were there expectations about how you would live your life?
You know, I think the expectations were so, I'm lucky enough to be the second child. Mm-hmm. Are you the first?
I'm second too. I think this is why we get along. The firstborn has to break all the barriers. Second child gets a little more leeway in what they can do.
That's exactly it. And I think my parents were so preoccupied with my sister and with their own stuff going on that there was, you know, it was a wonderful sort of neglect that the second child gets that I really benefited from. You know, I really thrived under them not being watchful.
Yeah.
So they didn't know I was taking acting classes. They didn't know I'd become an actor. They didn't know I was in plays or movies. Somebody I was in a play and I went home and there was a dinner party and someone had seen me in the play earlier that evening and told my parents. And they didn't really react because they, you know, it's like, okay, she's doing something. My parents have never even been to a play, right?
Wait, so, you were already acting. You were in roles. You were on stage.
In college,
you were
I got a role. You know.
But you hid it from your parents.
So I just didn't. I didn't tell them, and because they didn't ask many questions, it just, you know.
Yeah, just let it slide.
You just let it slide.
Did you feel like you had to tell them? Was there like a big reveal at some point?
I did a movie called Deli Belly, and it came out in 2011, I believe, and that was a first time. Like, my father had died years ago. He never even knew. He never saw anything. And I, you know, my mom found out that way because I'd done this big movie and she went to see it and she was really like, she laughed and she loved it. But there was, you know, your parents, South Asian parents, you get the message very early on that they're risk averse. I always say that they just want you to be stable, you know, that's what they want for you, to be stable and to be okay and not have to struggle. And, you know, to she didn't know till 2011.
So give me a sense, kind of take me back in time for a moment. When you are launching your acting career, you decide this is a thing I want to do, even if it's on the side with advertising, it sounds like.
Correct.
What are you auditioning for? Like, what are the roles that are available to you? What are the big movies? Who are the big stars at that point?
Like, my first speaking line was with a movie with Nicolas Cage.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Do you remember the lines?
Yeah. Hey, hello, weatherman. And I check out his butt. That's it.
It's perfect.
I was very, very lucky that I was doing a little bit of theater, you know, like in the evenings. I had a full-time job. You know, it was an advertising. It wasn't a 9-to-5 job. It was a 9-to whatever. And so I had to kind of finagle a couple of things here and there. And I couldn't do much of it. But I was very lucky. I did a play and someone was in the play who had a manager and an agent. And they both came to see their client and they met me there. And I got signed pretty early on in my acting career.
Okay.
Very lucky. It's just, it's complete fluke. And so... You know, one of my first non-speaking roles was playing my best friend's girlfriend, which is Sarita Chowdhury. It was the first time I had met her. So I was playing her girlfriend and I met her through that project. And it was just a lot of non-speaking and maybe a line here or there. But early on, I met a casting director called A.V. Kaufman. And till today, if you see my resume, it's all cast by A.V.
Really?
Yeah.
And for people outside the industry, tell me why that matters. What kind of control does someone like
that have? You have, oh my God. Yeah. It is, AV will still call me in for roles that are hard to cast. Till today, there'll be a role and she can't cast it, and then she'll call me in. It is someone who takes a chance on you. It's someone who doesn't look at how many credits you have or how many followers you have. AV will go see every play that's in New York City till today and just look for new raw talent. She cast me in The Night Of. There were so many actors that hadn't really done anything. And then they auditioned. She casts a very wide net. She has a great eye. And, you know, I got my first line with her, my first scene with her. And so she's always taken a risk with me and really been responsible for my trajectory. So you need that one person. That's all you need. You know, I was trying to apply for acting schools. I didn't get in anywhere. The industry is so full of no's, but you meet one person with a yes and it can change your life.
You mentioned The Night Of.
Yes.
And I wonder if you look back on that now as sort of a turning point in your career, because for anyone who hasn't seen it, my gosh, please go see it. But it's the HBO miniseries, a dramatic miniseries. Riz Ahmed is the star. John Turturro is in it. The late Michael K. Williams was starring in it as well. Got a ton of award nominations and awards. It was just such a phenomenal piece of writing and acting and presentation. What was it like for you? Did that really represent a turning point?
It did, both work-wise and the idea of who I am and what I want to do with my acting career. It was a huge turning point for
me. What does that mean?
You know, till then, I would pretty much take anything. You know, I was just starting off. I didn't really have any, like, idea of what kind of actor I wanted to be, what kind of projects I wanted to be. The Night Of came out. The Night Of was shot. We started shooting in 2012, and it came out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of stops and gaps, and Gandolfini died in the middle, and he was the lead. But when we shot Night Of, there wasn't any Muslim ban. It was a totally different time. And the Night Of, the Muslim ban dropped, and the Night Of dropped. Or we didn't know about Adnan Saeed when the Night Of was shooting, you know? So to have a piece that comes out at a very particular time that no one can account for when they're shooting something, but it drops at a time and becomes such a relevant and important, it was such a huge conversation around Islamophobia when the Night Of came out. The fact that we were eating with our hands, you know, in the dinner scenes became such a breakthrough moment. And there's these small things about the Night Of that really solidified what kind of projects I want to be part of, and even a small part of projects. Not necessarily the lead or a huge part. I just wanted to, when I read something and I knew that it might move the needle somehow, then I still today will always say yes to it, no matter how small the part is.
That's fascinating to hear you reference. So Adnan Saeed, just to catch everyone up, obviously the subject of that, the Serial podcast, right?
Correct.
Right. And then the Muslim ban, as you mentioned, when President Trump introduced this mass travel ban on mostly Muslim countries. So you're saying you don't think the show would have been received in the same way if it hadn't come out in the context that it did. Is that right?
I think the resonance was really amplified. It's a great show. It is one of the things I'm most proud of being, I have to say, just in terms of artistry. And when I see The Night Of, I see architecture, an architecture I rarely see anymore in film.
There is, I mean, to call you prolific, I think, is an understatement, because you are working constantly. You've always got stuff in the mix. But I feel like the next big thing people would know, millions came to know you, a whole new audience in many ways, was with the Netflix series Never Have I Ever.
Yes.
Which is Mindy Kaling, sort of coming of age comedy about a young Indian American teenager, and you play the mom.
Yes.
What was it about that role, and I guess working with Mindy on that, that made you want to do that? Because that's quite a leap from The Night Of.
Yeah. I could have, you know, I'm not a writer. I could have never written The Night Of or never conceived The Night Of, but I always wanted to play that mom. I always wanted to play her. The Never Have I Ever, it followed the trajectory of a girl, high school through graduation. That was the trajectory my son did at the exact same time. So it was a very meta kind of show. The character, Devi, graduated before Anab did. So I felt like I had a run through, like a rehearsal.
So your son is basically like right behind the character on the show. And you're playing her mom on the show, and you're actually his mom in real life.
Correct.
Amazing.
Correct. It's a show that is, I think, in my entire career, even going forward, it's going to be the closest thing to me that I've ever put out.
Really? You know? Why do you say that?
The closest. You know, I'm like something as small. I've talked about this, but like Nalini wears a necklace, a thali, right? And it's North Indian, South Indian, but the South Indian shape is very particular. So it's a necklace where you wear when you get married. And when my dad passed, my mom didn't take it off. You're supposed to take it off. Like there's a ritual and you take it off right after he passes. And she didn't. She wore it. And I wanted to. So decisions like that where I keep wearing the necklace until I'm ready to take it off. Like those decisions and the food we eat, the plates we eat on, the way we eat, like the set decor. There was so much stuff that was a collaboration. There's so much stuff that I brought from my house to set. You know, I selected this is my wedding ring. And there was a very similar wedding ring on Never Have I Ever, which I bought in a store in, you know, in South India. And it is like my, the door of my house opened and I went, walked off. It was the door of the set. It was so closely connected. The Mindy and Lang, the showrunner, was so open and receptive to that constant dialogue and script and the use of my language, Tamil. I cannot describe how me it felt. And also me that is much more, you know, the character is so much more connected to India and her culture than I actually am in my real life. And so to understand Ganesh Puja and to research that, you know, it's something I never celebrated. You know, I did the big Diwali stuff, but I can't describe it. It really changed me, and it changed me for the better, and it sunk me into myself a little more.
Do you feel like all those little things, because I feel like I noticed some of them watching it, but I probably missed a lot.
Yeah,
go back and rewatch some of these things now. Were those things you're doing for you, for the team, or for the audience? Because we talk a lot about representation, right? What it means to have a South Asian family represented in that way, an all-female lead cast.
Correct.
To have the details in those stories that weren't always explained, right? It was like, we're not doing this for you, we're doing this for us sometimes. Do I have that right?
I think authenticity will resonate whether you're from the culture or not. There's just, I always talk about frequency. There's a frequency at which it will resonate that you will feel and maybe not understand.
Hmm.
We did it for a lot of people. We did it for ourselves. We did it for the culture. We did it for the audiences. We did it for the show. We did it, you know, and I've always tried to bring that level of authenticity to everything.
So how do you, and I know there's been some conversation around this too, in that role,
you're
playing an Indian mom. She's an immigrant as well, right?
Like I am.
How do you make sure you don't fall into the trap of stereotypes? Because Nalini is, well, she is a sort of a strong, you know, I would say strict mom, right? Like pushing for excellence, a hard-driving Indian woman. There's the overbearing stereotype. And you do an accent for her as well, right?
Yeah, which is my accent. So this is not my... This is just one of my natural accents, but that is also my accent.
Well, it's your, but you don't speak with an Indian accent when
you
speak.
At home, I do.
At home? What do you mean?
Yeah. Like when I get off this call and I speak to my husband, it'll be with an Indian accent.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So is this an accent you're doing now?
It's not that it's put on, but I'm speaking with you.
Yeah.
So
I will say in our conversations, I've never heard you use that accent
until
even when you're speaking English.
Correct.
Yeah.
So if you come over to my house, my accent will be totally different. Okay. You will.
But so tell me about this, because there is this trap, right? Of there are stereotypes out there. How do you make sure that you're not just fueling them and being, as you said, like in that authentic space?
I mean, Mindy would never write like that. Mindy and Lang would never want to do that or perpetuate that stereotype. They will, you know, they use a lot of stereotypes for humor and it's hilarious. But again, it is a close, I always wanted to do a role that parented show how my mom parented, how my sister parents, which is none of the stuff that you see on TV, you know. My mom wasn't a tiger mom. She was like, please, you know, go to typewriter school at least. And, you know, she sent me to beauty school because I was feeling all like I can thread your mustache in under a second. Like, I'm so good at it. You know, she wasn't typical. And I don't know how other people parent, but none of my friends parent in what is a stereotypical way. So I really wanted to bring that. I wanted to bring what I saw to TV, but to this character, but Mindy and Lang just didn't write that way.
Hmm.
And I talk about this, you know, I've talked about before that I was really so so keen on doing the project. And then I'd auditioned, and then the deal memo from Netflix came. Do you know this story?
No, I don't.
The deal memo came in from Netflix, and it said Netflix YA. That's what it said in the deal memo. And I didn't know what YA stood for. And I thought, like, because I was in advertising, I'd have all these slogans. I thought it was Netflix, yeah, like, yeah, Netflix or something. Like, I've done that. Like, I've done, you know.
Not young adult, in other words.
I had no idea there was young adults.
Netflix, yeah.
I was like, Netflix, yeah. I was going through my deal memo for Netflix, yeah. So I was like, that's so interesting to put your, you know, your slogan in a deal memo, but I'm here for it. And then when I asked my manager, what's Netflix? Yeah. He said, it's Netflix YA. It's young adults.
And I was like, you haven't said that to anyone, have you, out loud?
I have. And I didn't want to do the project because I had a perception of what young adult mom would look like. Huh. Right. It felt like it would be a stereotype. So I had that conversation with Mindy and Lang. I was like, I don't want to do a Disney mom. I don't want to do the mom that I've always seen in young adult shows, mm-hmm. you know, a shadow or a cardboard character of a mom. And they were like, she's not that. We don't know how to write for that. Frankly, we're not that. She's not that. So yeah, it was a very important pivotal conversation for me to know that the mother that was being portrayed here wasn't the South Asian moms I've seen everywhere.
Well, in the vein of breaking stereotypes, that brings us perfectly to Deli Boys.
Oh, I love that.
Because this Hulu series is about, at its heart, a South Asian family. But yeah. It is unlike any South Asian family I have ever known or probably will ever know.
Correct.
If you can, in like a sentence or two, what is this show about for anyone who hasn't seen it?
It's about two very pampered Pakistani brothers, like Nepo babies, who haven't worked a day in their life. Their father drops dead, and now they have to take over the family business that they think is like 7-Elevens, like a bunch of convenience stores. And it turns out to be a cocaine empire. And I am running the cocaine empire and have to show these two complete dimwits how to run a very dangerous empire and keep them alive.
Your character is known as Lucky Auntie.
Lucky Auntie.
She's been described as a mix of Tony Soprano and the Real Housewives of Orange County. Would you agree with that?
Indeed. Indeed.
What was it about her that made you want to do this?
You know, it made me laugh. When I read the pilot, I laughed. And my role was tiny in the pilot. This was another thing, like, if you like the world, say yes. Mm-hmm. And see what happens. So it was a tiny part. I don't know where she was going. I don't know what her role was, but the whole premise. And there was a tone of absurdity that I heard that I really liked. And when we actually got to shoot it, there was a level of physical comedy that I'd never played in before that they really encouraged. So it really is like the love of my life, Deli Boys. It is so funny. It is such a physically ridiculous, absurd, I can't describe, but it has such heart to it. It's, as you said, it's about family and sticking together and loyalty.
It's such a stretch, too, to kind of take it back where we started on what you'd consider a turning point. The Night Of was such a deep, sort of still, dramatic performance.
Yes.
To this now, like, outlandish, very physical, complete, unique character in Lucky Auntie.
Yeah.
And yet you do them all with such grace, with such ease, it seems. Like, is that, I'm going back even earlier now to this young kid who figured out a way to fit in wherever she was, wherever she landed. Is there some piece of that informs your work now?
For me, it's, you know, what I learned on the writing of The Night Of, because I'm telling you, it was a roller coaster on set. And some days I was having really bad days, you know, it was one of those sets. And and no matter how I felt or what a day I'd have, the writing would always bring me back to the character in a way that I cannot explain. Like, I'd be
fucking, you know, just some, my mind would be somewhere else. And then I'd say the words and it would be like this little lifeboat I would get on that would just carry me through the river. So I learned the biggest lesson from the night off is go for really great writing, because you're going to have good days and bad days on set. You're going to have co-stars you just hate and co-stars you just love, and you need the writing to raft you through everything. And so if there's one thing in my career, a through line, it's the writing.
You know, it strikes me in a lot of the places you've worked.
Yeah.
You, even today, for all your incredible accomplishments and your awards and your recognition, you're still one of few, I think it's fair to say, one of few South Asian leading ladies who can operate at that level, on the big screen, on the big hit series.
Given an opportunity to operate at that level, there are so many of us who are so talented and so underused.
Yes. So what, I'm curious how you look at that now. Do you feel like there's a duty or a pressure or a responsibility to have to represent beyond yourself because you have made it in the room, you're at the table, you're on the marquee, you know how many other women there are out there who, as you said, given the opportunity, could do it, but they haven't been yet, right? So what does that feel like for you at this stage of your career?
I mean, you know, especially after Delhi Boys, again, I'm trying to solidify my vision for my career. And it really, like, I would be really happy telling our stories, South Asian stories, and having, you know, South Asian shows on the air. I think we're in a very particular phase of, you know, of what's happening in cinema and stuff. But when you create South Asian shows, you invite so many South Asian acts, like Delhi Boys. Never have I ever. It's like, I remember one day it was a sea of South Asian actors. There were maybe 100 South Asian extras on set that day, you know? Just to continue not only telling South Asian stories, I'd be really happy, you know, doing that and kind of breaking stereotypes and breaking the mold, but also telling diverse stories. So Asian, Black and Brown stories and really championing that. I'm very aware that when I was younger and starting my career, I wanted to be like in mainstream stuff. And that actually meant like part of white shows. And that's not where I'm at anymore.
This also leads me to this other thing, which I've noticed is really unique about the arc of your career. You got your first roles in your 30s.
Yeah.
Most of your success, it feels like the longer you do this, the bigger and better you get. Mm. Like most of the success has come in your 40s and 50s, which is not how people tend to think about a Hollywood or acting career.
1,000%.
So does that success mean something different when it comes later in life to you?
The wonderful thing is that it means absolutely nothing when it comes later in life.
What does that mean?
Has no impact.
Really?
Awards, recognition, reviews, nothing. It has no impact. You just learn that you learn to let go of everything, not to take anything seriously. You just it's water off your back. It's you know, with, again, you, there's a sense of not needing validation anymore in your 40s and like 50s is insane. Like I couldn't give a shit what anyone said, you know, but, you don't need it. You don't want it. You don't need it. It's wonderful to have for 24 hours when something nice happens, but it's nothing beyond that.
Would Porna in her 20s have handled all this differently, you think, if it had come to you then?
I mean, I remember doing Delhi Belly in Bollywood, and it was my early 30s, and you know, India watches movies a little differently than America does. They'll watch a movie 6, 7, 10 times, and they'll know that, you know, they've done a deep dive on you. And so navigating that particular time was a huge learning curve and very interesting. And it was before social media. And I was really, really grateful that I made a lot of mistakes.
So following in this wonderful arc of your career, you are now officially part of the DC Comics universe.
Can you believe someone is saying those words?
I mean, can you believe?
I cannot believe it.
you're playing Zoe.
Yeah.
Right? Who is not a superhero, right? She's a civilian in this superhero story. Do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
What do we need to know about her in the New Lantern series? What can you tell us?
And I just want to caveat, not a lot.
I'm sure NDAs are involved, correct?
I have a lump in my throat whenever I speak about this project. Someone like that.
This is a very different world to the one you've navigated before, right?
Oh my. Well, yes and no. So this project was very intimidating when I, was first approached to audition, because it felt like it shouldn't be me. It felt like it should be like someone who, knows this world, because I don't know this world, I don't engage with this world. I grew up with Wonder Woman and I'm always obsessed with Wonder Woman. But after Wonder Woman, I fell off the cliff with the comic book world. And so Chris Mundy, who is a showrunner and one of the writers with Damon and Tom, always said this. He uses the word grounded, and what it actually means. It's about interpersonal relationships. Hmm. There is all that happening, and all that is supremely interpersonal. It's very personal as well. Even when it's outside of Earth, the show, it's so human that it is. It's such an easy project to do in this category. Like, I was so scared I'd be acting with like green screen stuff the entire time, but that's not true. I loved it. I really loved it. I love the show. I think it's going to break open the genre in a way that's never been done before.
Break open how? What do you mean?
I'm watching the show because I've seen it.
Yeah.
It's one of the better shows I've ever been in.
Yeah.
I'm in it. It doesn't... I'm watching it. I'm in the world. I'm taking it in, and it's so, it's about the two lanterns, and it's about loyalty and competition. It's about young and old, new guard, old guard. It's about giving up power, wanting power. It's to make comparison to True Detective is not, it's not out there. It's very,
oh, interesting. Okay.
Very like True Detective.
Yeah.
And, they're dealing with, there's suddenly aliens that are in a place that shouldn't be there. And it's about dealing with very, very intensely human problems with outsiders. It's dealing with outsiders, and how can outsiders belong? Should outsiders belong? It's relevant, and you can extrapolate to the current situation here. So
this is a full circle point you're making here. Do you feel like the context of the world right now into which this is being released, does that matter?
It does matter. Very much. It does matter. It definitely echoes inside the scripts, I don't know. I don't have words for how, as a person who is not entrenched in this world, how it's such an invitation to come into this world. And I am so happy I took up the invitation. It is Amna, when you see it, you will be mind blown. And I'm so, and they didn't, they cast, she's South Asian. It's not like I'm like, she's definitely mysterious, like very ambiguous ethnicity or whatever, but she's like, it's a South Asian role. And it's very cool.
So I have to ask you about this, because I know there was a big rollout at Comic-Con, which is like, it's a huge deal for these movies and this genre, right? But you and your castmates were asked about the moments that made you most proud.
This is what I was saying when you open your mouth and you're like, oops, what is coming out?
You said it was the sex scene that you had to do for this.
Yes. It's not so... So let me rephrase the proud of that. It was so terrifying that I was proud that I did it. How's that? I was proud that I, when I see it on screen, it's like not bad.
You don't have to explain. I mean, but, and also we should note this is, it's sort of a family friendly genre anyway. So it's not some out there scene from what I understand. You tell me. But tell why was that your answer, especially at this stage of your career? Why do you think yes. that was the first thing that came out of your mouth?
I mean, I'm, you know, I'm 53 and I've done sex scenes before, but nothing like this one. And it's rated R, meaning the show is rated R. It's not like, you know, it's. I had to overcome a couple of demons to feel comfortable, you know, doing it in my head and stuff and really kind of, and, you know, the people are so loving and lovely, your team and people surrounding you and the actors, it's so supportive. So it's not that, it's just your own, like, holy shit, like, okay, here we go, you know? And I always say, like, I don't think I was asked to do like an intense, you know, sex scene my entire career, and then suddenly here we are. It was great. Proud of it.
Well, I can't wait to see it. I say that with 100% honesty. I want to ask you too about your perspective more broadly on the industry, because you sit in such a unique place, and mm-hmm. you have such I think a well-defined vision of the stories that you want to tell and the place that they hold in society. And I know you know all this because you track all this, but there is this like a Hollywood diversity report that comes out every year. UCLA puts
Crazy.
It out.
What the hell's happening? What's happening with Hispanic representation?
So this
as the population
year,
goes up.
That's right. The trends don't seem to be matching what's happening in the rest of the country, right? And so this right. past year, and just looking across streaming services, which is where a lot of the investments and the new content is coming from, they actually found representation for women and people of color across the streaming platforms went yeah. down in 2025. And that included, by the way, that included K-pop Demon Hunters, which was incredibly diverse casting and team behind that. Lead actors of color in particular dropped 51% in 2024, that was an all-time high, down to 36% in 2025. So from where you sit, do you see that happening in real time? Do you feel that? And why do you think it's happening?
It's allowed, it's okay for it to happen now. You know, I think it's happening across the board. They don't have to green light us. It's always a risk. Right? Like a Never Have I Ever is an anomaly. Hmm. It did so well. It was such a huge, it was a crown jewel of, you know, Netflix. Yeah. And it's always a risk, you know, and they were willing to take the risk when I think there was pressure to take the risk. And I don't think this, the foot is off that pedal. You know, I see casting announcements every day, and sometimes I'm like, holy shit, it's all white. That's incredible. It's an incredible thing to suddenly see this. And it's such a shame, because it adds so much richness into a story when you add diversity of any kind. I actually always will track what's happening with the Latinx community in Hollywood, because I think it's such a canary for us. And when you see those numbers go down, it's such a shame. It's you know, it's coming to everyone. And I every award show I'll track how many of us get nominated. I'll track it, I'll clock it, how many people win. And you know, sometimes there is a dichotomy. It's, you know, some people will say, oh, our show is diverse, but it's a black and white, you know, dichotomy. There's the Hispanic and Asian and indigenous representation is really not there. So, but I feel like they feel like they've done their job with that kind of thing. But I do believe like creators of color now have more power than ever. I know Mindy will always have diversity in her shows, you know, and Abdullah Saeed, who created Deli Boys, will always have diversity in his shows. So I don't think, but the number of people as it is were so few, and then their projects are not getting greenlit as readily as they used to be.
Yeah. Do you see any reason to be hopeful on that front? I mean, do you see any signs? I know you mentioned Mindy, obviously, who's sort of a leader in this space, and so many others, but the resources are dwindling, projects aren't being greenlit. Okay. Where do you see the optimism on this front?
We've just ridden the storm so many times. This is my life, you know? Hmm. I don't think my next job is guaranteed. Like, I've never thought that. I've stopped becoming overly anxious, but I don't know what's next, you know? And so we've learned to live with a level of uncertainty, which is now like in our DNA. We don't take anything for granted. And it's waves and cycles. And I just happened to be I just caught a good wave, you know, and I don't know what's next, and it's okay. It's, you know, you keep doing amazing, amazing. We all keep doing amazing work, and we show up as fantastic, reliable, you know, actors. And hopefully it'll translate in some way or form. But I think there's, you know, as you asked the question, I'm very aware that I don't know what's next.
Given that level of uncertainty, do you even think about where your career is going to be 10 years from now or 15 or 20 years from now? Given you couldn't imagine this today, 10 years ago.
I couldn't imagine. If you asked me when I began, if you told me I was in a DC property and, you know, up next is like this unbelievable series on Apple called Nocturne, like I couldn't have ever imagined. Mm-mm. So why would I sit and think I can imagine for the next 10 years? I can't.
Is there any like big dream project or directing or something out there that you want to manifest that's like, okay, maybe one day that's the thing that I could do?
No.
No. Just take it as it comes. Just live in the moment.
No, I never have. No. I swear to God, I've been asked that so many times, and you know, I grew up with such a small vision of what I could do as an actor. You know, I swear to God, I was like, oh, I'll just be in acting class. Like that was that's the world I came from.
Yeah.
My acting class is phenomenal. It's at the Barrow Group and it's phenomenal. But I realized I cannot dream big for myself because my vision was so small. So other people dream big for their projects, and by circumstance, they dream big for me. And that's where I'm at. I don't have the capacity to do that.
All right, before I let you go, can you indulge me in a quick lightning round?
Go for it.
Excellent. Okay, lightning round with Poorna Jagannathan. Poorna, if you were not an actor, what do you think your job would be? What would you be doing?
Journalist.
Journalist.
1,000%.
I love that. We could be colleagues. Yeah. If you had a theme song that played every time, like you walked into a room,
I will survive. What would it be? That will get me out of my chair.
I love that. It seems like you are always working. You are one of the busiest people I know. But when you're not working, what do you do? Where would we find you?
I have an Aura ring. I can clock 10 hours of sleep a day.
Really? Good for you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That impresses me more than anything else you've said this whole time. You are starring in a superhero movie. Can you name one person that you would count among your real life heroes or heroines?
Oh. For me, Mindy Kaling is actually a superhero. She's a single mom of 3 kids. Enough said. And then on top of that, she creates like no creator has ever created. She keeps her sense of humor and her humility with everything. And like she called me yesterday, like she always has time for her friends and always has time for everyone. And I have no idea how she always has 2 or 3 shows happening, you know? her engine is like no one else's engine.
Yeah.
She's built different.
If related, and I said superhero movie, I meant superhero series. Yeah. But if you had a superpower of your own, what would it be?
Someone just asked me that. Can I give you what I answered for that? Or do you want
sure,
me to
if it's true.
Something?
No. What did you say?
I said that my superpower would be to time travel so I could go back to the time where my kid didn't speak back to me and then go back to middle school and fuck me up some bitches. Quote, unquote.
All right, finally, Poorna, what is one thing that you hope people say about you when you're not in the room to hear it?
Oh, that I paid attention to them, that they felt I paid attention, and they felt like they could be themselves.
Mm. Poorna Jagannathan.
That's such a sweet answer, a question to
it's
ask. Thank
so,
you.
Well, it's a sweet answer, too, and you've been so generous with your time, and I so enjoy being able to chat with you, even with your gardener outside. Making the rounds.
I love you so much. Thank you for always
right back at you, sis.
Okay.
Thank you for making the time. Good to talk with you.
My pleasure. I'll talk to you soon.